Calling a public hearing to order. This is a public hearing regarding the operating budget request of Tompkins Cortland Community College. Is anyone here to speak to the matter of the operating budget for 2009-2010 for TC3? The public hearing happens before our regular meeting. Has anyone come to speak to that topic? Seeing none, I'll close the public hearing and ask you to rise and join me in pledging allegiance to the flag for our legislature meeting. I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Could the roll call of members, please.
Ms. Kiefer?
Present.
Ms. McAsey?
Here.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Present.
Mr. Proto?
Here.
Mr. Randall?
Here.
Ms. Robertson?
Here.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Here.
Mr. Sigler?
Here.
Mr. Stevenson?
Present.
Mr. Burbank?
Present.
Ms. Chop?
I'm here.
Mr. Dennis is asked to be excused. Mr. Hattery?
Here.
Ms. Herrera?
Here.
Mr. Klingelair?
Present.
14 members present.
Petitions, communications, and notices.
Communications are on the desks.
We have no special orders of the day, so we will proceed to privilege of the floor for the public. We have three people who signed up in advance, but others can speak after they. First, we'll have Lori Konwinski from City of Ithaca. Is Lori here? Yeah.
Chair, would it be possible for Herb to go first?
Sure. If Herb is ready, that's great. Herb is from the town of Ithaca.
My apologies for not quite being ready. I didn't think you were going to get there so fast. My name is Herb Engman. I'm from the 120 Warren Road. And I'm here tonight to encourage you to consider and support the farm worker issue that's before you. I worked for 35 years on farm worker issues, and for 30 years I worked on 4-H programs concurrently. So I got a chance to look at the issue from the farm worker perspective as well as the more traditional farmer perspective. There's a saying that I think is apropos in this situation for the legislation at the state level. The only thing necessary for the triumph of evil is for good people to do nothing. And that's what's happened with farm workers for the past 75 years. Farm workers were left out of the 1930s legislation called the Fair Labor Standards Act because of racism. The legislators from the South did not want to extend to their black farm workers the same equal rights that were being extended to the rest of the population. So farm workers were excluded. On the New York State level, even though the New York State Constitution says that all workers have the right to collectively bargain, the labor laws were written in such a way as to say that farm workers were not workers. And so we exercised our own clever way of discriminating against farm workers. There has been some progress. In 1996, drinking water was made available to farm workers in the field. We're talking about 1996. 1998, the New York legislature decided, finally, that farm workers should have access to toilets in the field. 1998. In 2000, equal minimum wage was extended to farm workers. Before that, you could legally pay in this state less to a farm worker than you would pay to virtually any other worker in the state. This sort of discrimination has gone on at the national and state levels. Now, this is not just me saying that these things need to change. In 1991, Cornell University did a study which said all of the exclusions under law should be removed regarding farm workers. This was a joint project of the College of Agriculture and Life Sciences, the College of Human Ecology, and the School of Labor, Industrial and Labor Relations. This study, by the way, was sponsored by the state of New York under Mario Cuomo. At the federal level, there have been multiple reports, including this one in 1994, from the U.S. Department of Labor, saying exactly the same thing, that it was time to transfer the burden of farm work from the farm workers back to the work to the owners, to the public, and to the consumers. And there have been many such studies in the past. I did a study in 2006 where I asked the people of the state of New York whether they supported equal protections for farm workers under the law, and over 80% of the respondents in a statewide survey said indeed they supported equal protections under law for farm workers. So I want to hand out to you two pages. One is the exclusions under law from New York State labor laws. The other is the origins of the exclusions of farm workers from that equal protection. And you'll see some of the language that people used when they excluded farm workers from these protections. So if I may pass those out, and then I would be happy to later on have any questions that you would like to ask on details.
Thank you, Herb. And Laurie?
Thank you so much. My name is Laurie Konwinski. I reside at 302 Cascadilla Street here in the city of Ithaca. I'm here representing the New York State Catholic Conference. I'm a member of the Economic Justice Committee of that conference. That's all of the millions of Catholic New Yorkers, our bishops, our cardinal, who have for many years supported this legislation. We do this out of our belief in the dignity of each human being and the dignity of work and the right of workers to organize. That's one of our Catholic social teachings for over 100 years. I come to you asking for your support for this resolution in support of the legislation to get rid of exclusions, also out of my own experience. I have spent 9 summers as an interpreter in a migrant camp health clinic. I've also worked for various other health and safety organizations working on migrant camps. I visited camps in central New York, the Hudson Valley, spoken to hundreds of farm workers in their native language. I've seen the grinding poverty that they live in. I've seen terrible injuries that they sustain from dangerous, exhausting work. I've seen the sort of fatigue and chronic pain they live with because of that work. The Justice for Farm Workers campaign is one that is supported by a very wide spectrum of organizations. Again, the New York State Catholic Conference, the Council of Churches, the Protestant Churches of New York. Many labor organizations, including SEIU 1199, CSEA, and the New York State Teachers. We join together on this because we believe that farm workers deserve the same kind of labor rights that we take for granted for all other workers in this state. There are those who oppose this legislation, and I want to try to counter some of those reasons why people would not support equal rights for farm workers. There are those who say this is going to hurt the family farm. Ladies and gentlemen, I assure you this legislation that would provide equal rights for those working on farms, that's not talking about a farm that's only run by family members. That's not covered under this legislation. This is when workers are hired, not just people working on the same family. Family farms in New York, that's a slippery sort of subject. Some family-owned farms are million-dollar businesses. There are some migrant camps that have 90 or 100 workers. We're not always talking about the sort of vision we have of a small mom-and-pop sort of generation after generation farm. These are large businesses. The only immediate cost of farmers, to growers, that this legislation would mandate is for them to pay disability insurance. At this point, farm workers are not covered by growers are not required to cover their workers with disability insurance. That's the only immediate expense that they would incur. We feel that this legislation would help level the playing field for small farmers who already are under a lot of pressure. There's a lot wrong with our agricultural system in this country. Those who treat their workers well, those who are smaller farmers, they're competing against the big farms. We feel this would help them as well as helping farm workers. We know that things in Albany are really chaotic these days. We're trying to get this legislation through the Senate. Time is of the essence. So we urge you, we need to have support coming from upstate now, tonight, so that they hear our voices that Tompkins County supports farm workers before this session ends, because they need to hear it now. When they finally get their act together and get back in session, they're going to move on this legislation. That's why we urge you to put this resolution in support of the legislation on your agenda tonight and to vote to support it. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Lori. I have Mike Lane next.
Good evening. Mike Lane from Dryden. I don't think any of us who follow the news at all were more shocked than to read about the occurrences in our New York State Senate. It's important to a county because a county under our governmental system is really an arm of the New York State legislature because of the large quantity of mandates that come down to the counties for social services and other programs that must be handled at the county level. To watch the state Senate deteriorate, it's been called all kinds of things, a bunch of clowns, people, you know, what are they doing, what's happening up there. And it's both parties. It's the Republicans and it's the Democrats. It's one party trying to change the balance of power through enticing two senators, both under indictment for various wrongdoings, and being supported by a very rich upstater who says that everybody in Albany is under indictment, so who cares? Well, most of the people care, and the people in Tompkins County, I believe, care about things like this. I was very sorry to see our own Ithaca's Senator George Winter up to his eyebrows in all of this mess. Looks like we're going to end up now with a 31-31 split in the New York State Senate. How will things like the extension of the county's 35 or 36 counties' 1% sales tax be accomplished with that kind of a system up there? What it points to is the real need for reform, and not the kind of reform that the coup people are talking about, which is simply let's get the power back to where it was before. It's what we need is real reform in this state. We need a constitutional convention. We need people committed to change, particularly in the issue of redistricting. I've talked about redistricting here at the county level, but we really need it at the state level. Sadly, when Governor Elliot Spitzer was elected, or I should say not sadly when he was elected, a good thing when he was elected was that he talked about genuine reforms. Unfortunately, his personal life led to his resignation and disgrace, and those kinds of reforms have kind of gone by the talk about them has gone by the wayside. It's time that we started the dialogue again to talk about it. We need a constitutional convention. We need redistricting by an independent body to have regular districts, not set up for one party or the other. And we need to have a kind of government that we can be proud of. I personally believe we should have a unicameral legislature. One house is sufficient. I say that tonight because, as I said, the counties are a part of state government whether we like it or not, and what happens in Albany affects every one of us here in Tompkins County. Thank you.
Thank you, Michael. We have one more speaker. Mary Lair signed up, and then if others want to speak, you have a three-minute time limit. You can speak afterwards by raising your hands. Mary?
Hi, I'm Mary Lair from the City of Ithaca, and I'm speaking to you as a farmer in support of the farm worker legislation. You may hear that other farmers around the state and the Farm Bureau are against this, And I want to say, as a farmer, that I am very much in support of supporting farm workers. While I don't want any farms to go under, obviously I believe strongly in farming, I don't think that farms should be making a profit off the backs of other people, which is what is going on now. And farming and domestic workers are the only two industries that have this exclusion, as Herb spoke about. And you may ask why Tompkins County should take a stand on this. There are farm workers in this county, and I know farm workers in this county who have been harassed. So it will send a strong signal to Albany if you do pass this legislation, and I urge you to do so. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other members of the public who wish to speak under privilege of the floor? Bruce?
I supplied another CD for you people to...
You state your name and where you reside.
Oh, sorry about that. Bruce Babcock. I live in Chermansburg, New York. And on this CD stuff, I have another audible conversation that was with an SPCA animal control worker during the time period I was harassed with my last dog. But after the last time I spoke here, I looked on the web for judicial and... other stuff in the legislative body here in Tompkins County, and I discovered there's one woman lawyer that's in charge of the Law Guardian office. I spoke in the 2004 meeting on her and also Judge Judy Rossiter. Now, this woman that's in the Law Guardian's office was the attorney that my ex-wife hired. She not only worked for my wife, but not until the support collection hearing that I had requested that was stalled for 5 months, she worked for the judge. She not only worked for the judge, but she also worked for a support collection unit. I was denied an attorney even though I own property in this county and I've been paying taxes over 10% of my yearly income, which is below poverty level. But I was denied that hearing. And also an attorney to defend myself in that hearing. And she still works here for the county under her taxpayer payroll, from what I understand, maybe, but I haven't checked into that. Now, I looked on the web for this because I wanted to know who is in charge of the judges, because I spoke about the judge that had a hearing without my presence, without my knowledge, and threatened to charge me with contempt of a court because I didn't fill out a form. He also took the information off my check, sent it to the attorney for the other person, and garnished my bank account afterwards, and only after the tax payments that I made cleared the county. But anyway, I found out that the judge is in charge of all these judges at Judge Judy Rossiter. Now, in the 2004 meeting, I talked about a time when I was shackled to the wall at the police station, denied the right to go to the bathroom, that I had to, after begging and begging, the person that called for my right to come to pick me up was Judge Judy Rossiter. I was exposed because I had to go to the bathroom and do it on the wall. This judge was in that room, present. Not one hearing was held on that human rights violation, and this woman judge allowed it. Not only that, as she called the person that gave me the ride a month later and told me to show up in court, I'll be arrested. No human rights issues were ever raised, and the attorney that I got assigned was Jim Baker, and he said I had no case about that human rights violation. And he's the mentor for the Bar Association in this county right now. And these people, all of them, including the Law Guardian Office attorney, I don't understand why these people have not been removed from serving law, having the right to have a law license. It's not just in this state or this county. They shouldn't even have the right to practice law anywhere in this world.
Bruce, I'll have to ask you to start winding up.
Yeah, well, that's all. I'm just done anyway. But anyway... That CD has some more of the violations of my rights as well as the documentation of the things I just spoke about. And there's only 11 CDs out of 15 people, but today I didn't have time to catch the bus. But that's all I want to address, and I hope this is the last time I have to come in and speak.
Thank you. Is there anyone else from the public who wishes to speak under privilege of the floor? If so, come to the mic, state your name and your residence, and speak to whichever topic you wish.
My name is Albert Lurcock. I'm from the city of Ithaca, and I also believe in service dog laws that are not being followed. The laws are very, very clear on what service dogs are, what their purposes are, but when you get on the local and street level to try to use your service dog in your life, you are met with nothing but straight resistance, which forces you to go to human rights to try to get resolve for these situations. And these laws have been on the books. This book was written in 2002. It's just a matter of getting these laws out to the public, and I feel there probably won't be any problems if we can get these kind of books and this kind of law out to the general public. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Albert. Any other members of the public wish to speak under privilege of the floor? If not, we'll move on to privilege of the floor for legislators. I think Will Burbank has our youth award this evening.
Thank you, Mike. We have two youth awardees, Christian and Jordan. If you come up this way, there's a... And firefighter, I don't know, are you... And is there anybody here from the IPD?
Yeah.
Guys, why don't you go again?
Well, good evening. This is my first time doing the Distinguished Youth Award, and it's I'm thrilled to have two young people that I think are truly deserving and were an inspiration to me. I met both of them before them, and Jordan was telling me, I sensed she's a little nervous, and I told her that I was too, so hopefully we'll both struggle through it. We live in a community where we like to think that people take care of each other. And that if you get in trouble, there will always be somebody there to help you. And I think that is generally the case here. But the willingness to help is not quite the same as being able to do it in a way that's truly effective. And we have tonight two young people who, at a pivotal time, were there to come to the assistance of somebody else. And I think demonstrated in a way that we can all learn from how to be helpful. The first person I'd like you to introduce is Jordan Liu. This is Jordan. Jordan, you want to step forward a little, please? Jordan is a student at the Elizabeth Ann Clune Montessori School on King Road. And earlier this spring, she noticed a fellow student coughing and losing the ability to speak. Jordan sought the attention of her teachers, who got the student to the nurse's office, where it was determined that the student was suffering from an anaphylactic attack, basically a severe allergic reaction, and she just literally couldn't breathe. Jordan never left her friend's side, offering comfort and reassuring the student that everything was going to be okay, and also helped to get the girl's medical history. And firefighter Pendle wrote that this young lady was a rock during the time of this very different trying time. And she was nominated by Dave Burbank and supported by Brian Pendle. So, Officer Pendle, would you like to say anything yet?
Good afternoon, folks. This is an honor that we're here with Jordan. I first got involved in the emergency services in 1982, so in quite a few years, I've dealt with several patients in all different age groups. And when we respond to an incident that involves a young child, everyone, even the adults, are kind of a little more nervous than normal. And when I arrived and Jordan was comforting her friend, she was able to obtain patient information from me because the other young lady was very shy and you know, don't talk to strangers, even though we're the fire and police there. But she was very shy, so I had Jordan do a lot of communication for me. She was able to retrieve a lot of important medical information, patient history. And by the end of it, Jordan and her friend were carrying on a conversation with me. And basically, Jordan did all the work, and I was there to record all the information she got for me. And I just, it was amazing to see a little 9 years old now? You're 9 in a week. So this is a nice birthday present for you. So for an 8-year-old individual to have that much composure and compassion for a fellow student, I immediately wrote the fire chief a letter, and I said, we need to do something, and here we are.
Stay right here, because we're going to come back and give a little word we're going to give you. But I also would like to introduce you to a second student. And I apologize in advance. I may mess up your name, but you'll correct me if I get it wrong. This is Christian Schupbach. And Christian is in 7th grade at DeWitt. And on March 8th of this year, he was hiking along the 6 Mile Creek Trail near his home when he heard a woman screaming. And he discovered that this woman had fallen through the ice at the reservoir. She had been attempting to rescue her dog and was in severe distress. And fortunately, Christian was there and was able to come to her aid and to let her know that he was going to go and get help. And you, what, called 911 and then helped direct the people back. And the really exciting thing is that the woman, having been in the ice in very cold conditions for quite a long time, was saved and I believe is actually here tonight. I don't know. She, yes. and so she was nominated, she and Officer Stephen Morocco and Lieutenant Monticello all nominated Christian, and I'm thrilled to have you come here.
Thank you. I'm Lieutenant Monticello. I've been with the Ithaca Police Department for 27 years, and going back through my career, this is the first time I can recall an incident like this where a youth did the right thing. He called 911, gave the dispatcher the correct information, location, which actually helped the emergency responders get there quickly, and our officers were able to locate the lady that was in distress as well as the dog. So it was fortunate everything worked out well, and I really commend his actions. I'm very proud of what you did, and it really helped us do our jobs. I appreciate it.
So the other part is we have plaques to give to each of you, and these are plaques that are both sponsored by the good people that help make these awards possible. That would be Spang's Ambulance and the Tompkins County Legislature, of course, the Cougar Radio Group, Purity Ice Cream, which I think you're going to like what they contribute to the thing, and A&B Awards Engraving, and we're very appreciative of that. But this plaque goes to Jordan Liu, and it says, in recognition of your outstanding commitment to your community, June 2009. And, Jordan, this is a little bag of stuff that you can open. I think you'll find some nice things in there that will be very good. And let's see, we have another one. Okay. Christian, in recognition of your outstanding commitment to your community, June 2009, we thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Will. Are there other legislators who wish to speak under privilege of the floor? Martha Robertson?
That's a hard act to follow. Thank you, Will. Thank you to the kids.
Over here.
That's great. We keep hearing more about the gas drilling, and I don't know if I'm going to steal your thunder. You look at me, Pam, but there are a couple of things that have come up about the Marcellus Shale gas drilling recently, and there's we got in our boxes some correspondence from Assemblywoman Barbara Lifton, and I wanted to draw your attention to the fact that she wrote to Commissioner Pete Granis of the state DEC, endorsing her own words, but sort of endorsing our request that the comment period for the SGEIS be extended from 30 to 90 days. So she's definitely taking quite a few actions in that regard. There's a green sheet on your desk about a meeting in Morrisville on Saturday, and proactive municipal response to natural gas development in upstate New York. And then just, I don't know how many of you noticed the Ithaca Journal article, June 13th. Drilling could be culprit behind Texas earthquakes. I keep hearing about this stuff. One way or another, this is not necessarily what drilling is billed to be. In this one county, they've got something like 200 drill sites. There are about 200 drilling sites in this county, and they've collected quite a good number, quite a good amount of royalties, etc. However, and this is the horizontal drilling that they're using with this horizontal fracking. And they're worried they've had quite a few earthquakes, not very large, but magnitude of 2 or 3 on the Richter scale. And they've never had earthquakes before. In the last 7 or so years, they've started having earthquakes. Makes you kind of wonder. So I'm really glad New York State is taking action to really look at this. I hope we take enough action to look hard enough at it.
Thank you, Martha. Frank Porto?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Staying on the same topic of gas well drilling, I also, in addition to Barbara Lifton's letter, you may recall a month or so ago I circulated a sample of a letter that I was sending and hoping that you would as well to most of our, if not all, of our state and federal legislators asking that they get behind the extension, supporting the extension at least to 60 days on the SDGIS, I think is what it is. And in addition to Barbara Lifton's letter, I've received a response from George Winter. And George, of course, is very supportive of the effort to extend the comment period. In addition to that, last evening in Danby, we had an opportunity, some of us had an opportunity to hear from a panel on the gas drilling. There was an attorney and several other individuals there from Tioga County talking about the consolidation that they're doing to develop a consortium down there. They're a little bit ahead of us on that as far as drawing landowners together. And, of course, our own former county administrator, Steve Witcher, was there. Steve's been asked to work with the county personnel to try to pull some of the information together. But the reason I wanted to mention this is I think Ed Marks deserves a real pat on the back. Steve distributed a one-page, I don't want to call it an agenda, but it was a list. And if anyone asks, and I have a copy of it, and I think it ought to be circulated to the other, to you folks, Steve distributed a list that Ed was very instrumental in putting together that involved Public Works, Planning, the Health Department, the EMC, the Water Resources Council, Emergency Services, Jonathan Wood in the County Attorney's Office, with specific tasks assigned to each of them. And as chairman of the WRC, I can tell you that Liz Cameron is working on the list that has been assigned to the subcommittee that I formed there. But if anyone were to ask you, is the county involved in this, I can tell you that Ed has gotten us involved in it. but that was at our instigation. So I really... Right, Ed? A comment was made last night, does the county have the money to fund everything that we're proposing here? And, of course, the answer is we don't know what it's going to cost, but we're there for support. One request was made that Rick Dietrich turned to me to answer, and I had to be very blunt, which you know I'm shy about doing. The request was because we want to make sure that water, which is the key issue here, at least for landowners, the water being protected for all of the rural residents and the city residents drawing water from wells or from water bodies that are impacted by wells or could be impacted by this drilling. We were asked if we as a county could test every well in the county. Nice idea, but I said, if Joe Mariana tells me it's okay, remember the average cost, this is a larger scan. It's not just going to get a coliform test. This is a larger scan of ingredients, if you will, and we don't know because we don't know what's going into that hydrofracking stuff. We don't know what we're going to be testing for. But the Community Science Institute has come up with a plan to test wells. However, the average cost is between $500 and $700 per test per well. We're going to try to make a deal, if you will, but to be perfectly honest with you, it is highly improbable that the county will step forward and pay the freight for all of that. But what we want to do, and this is what we're going to be bringing back through the Water Resources Council, what we want to do is try to work something into any lease agreement or anything that the DEC is putting together. And I'm glad that the resolution came out a couple of weeks ago that supported the DEC asking for this extension along with other things. What we hope to do is get the gas companies that are doing the drilling to not only participate in the drilling and the testing of wells, but bearing the cost of that test so that people before and after will know whether they're dealing with contaminated water or not. One reminder, the July meeting of the Water Resources Council will have on its agenda two individuals. All of you are welcome to come. One will represent the Great Lakes water bodies. I reminded you of this the last time around. The other will represent Susquehanna because there's a lot of concern about whether you can move. We know you're not supposed to be moving water and hydrofracking liquid that comes from one water body to the other water body for disposal. And we want to invite those. We have invited, and it's confirmed that they're coming. To make a presentation on what can and cannot be done and what we should be looking for. So when I make that offer.
When is that meeting?
July, I believe it's July 20th, Pam. Wait a minute, let me get my calendar out.
You can circulate that at your leisure. I've got Leslin next.
Well, I want to thank you for your Distinguished Youth Award. I work with children for the most part of my day, and so I was trying to compose myself over the years. Little ones just trot on there. They have taught me how to be super, super sensitive, which I'm not sure is a good thing, so I cry at every little thing now. But that was really very just impressive, and I hope we can continue the law enforcement, emergency services agencies do a really good job of education in our school systems with our young people around calling 911 and what are the things to do, and I just hope that they'll continue to do those kinds of things. So thank you. I want to say a public thank you to Judy Saul, who retired as the director of CDRC after 25 years founding, and for 25 years being at the helm of that agency. Judy sort of set the standard that I live up to in terms of professionalism, passion for work, and work ethics. And she was a member of the Human Services Coalition, and often we would see her here during our budget times as they advocate for funding. CDRC does amazing work in this community, And a lot of it, I will say, is credited to the leadership of Judy Saul. So I wish her well in her retirement. I'm sure all of you do and share that sentiment as well, and hope that the good work will continue there. And then I just want to make a couple of quick announcements, community announcements. This coming Saturday, actually Friday and Saturday, the 19th marks the celebration of Juneteenth, which is the official celebration of the end of slavery some years after the Emancipation Proclamation. And so on Saturday, June 20th, the Juneteenth celebration, which is supported through some of our tourism dollars or community celebration tourism dollars, will occur at the Southside Community Center, 305 South Plain Street, from noon until 7 o'clock. And I encourage all of you to please come by and support and get educated, whatever else there is. And on Friday, the Southside has begun, the Southside in conjunction with Kearna Cooperative Extension, or the opposite way around, Kearna Cooperative Extension in conjunction with the Southside Community Center has begun what is called the Congo Market. If you don't know about the Congo Market was a Sunday market developed by slaves where they had the opportunity to bring their goods the one day that they have some time off, those who did, to sell and trade. And so that opportunity is being revived here in Ithaca at the Southside Community Center, at least for the next three Fridays. It began last Friday from 4 to 8. And again, I encourage everyone, those of you who are watching out there and those of you around this table, to come by and check it out. Local vendors, your cottage industry vendors, you know, your household mama who's been knitting stuff for years and want to put it out there for sale or trade, please come by and visit with them. Thank you.
Thank you, Leslie. We have five other legislators at least who want to speak, and I just want to remind people that we have many staff waiting for agenda items to be gotten to, so we don't have a three-minute time limit, but
we should take our time.
Stay as Chris. I have Greg and then Pam, and then I'll keep going down the list.
I too, wanted to thank Will for his thoughtful presentation to the two youth award winners tonight. And I just wanted to remind everybody that in addition to our role as sponsors of the Distinguished Youth Program, our emergency communications professionals play an important role in incidents such as those that we spoke about tonight as a resource for both the emergency responders and the civilians in the community. So I just wanted to mention that.
Thank you, Greg. Pam, and then Will.
Well, I wanted to thank Martha and Frank for raising the issue that we are dealing with in this county in terms of the drilling that we see that's going to be taking place in our county. And Frank, you are absolutely right. Ed Marks has done a wonderful job in terms of organizing all of the parts of the county agencies to help look at this issue. But I also would like to give some kudos to the Council of Governments, which is the group that all of the heads of the government in Tompkins County meet on a regular basis. And a subcommittee of that group, headed up by Don Barber, has taken on this issue. And they have been looking at the specific language that towns and villages can adopt that will help them protect their roads and the sites, and they have been working in conjunction with the planning department about this, and they are an important link in this, because if all the municipalities in the county are educated about what they can do, the ordinances that they can pass, I think we'll be in a better position to deal with this situation when it descends upon us, which it is going to do. So thank you to the leaders who have been participating in that, who are members of TCOG.
Thank you, Pam. On to Will, then Carol, then Dooley.
Thank you, Mike. Two things I wanted to make you aware of. A week from tonight, on Tuesday, June 23rd, there will be a meeting that has been called by two neighboring civic associations, the West Hill Civic Association in the city and the Ithaca West Hill community, which is in the town, also in West Hill. And they have called a meeting trying to bring together citizens with town and city leaders to talk about if there's any way to get a handle on the development that has been happening, specifically on West Hill. And it'll be a chance for citizens to speak out. Mayor Peterson and Supervisor Hervangman will be there to answer questions and hear concerns. And I would encourage anybody that is interested to come a week from tonight, Tuesday the 23rd, 6 p.m. at Town of Ithaca Town Hall. The other thing I wanted to let you know, as you may be aware, I'm this legislature's liaison to Cooperative Extension. I used many years ago in a previous life, I used to work for Cooperative Extension, and I thought I had a pretty good handle on all they do, but I have become utterly amazed at how incredibly diverse in terms of their activities and their interests, including things like the Congo Market. You, as probably know, our own Sean Martel Moore is now serving as chair of the board, and I've really been enjoying working with her. I did want to alert one little project, which is one of many that they're going to be doing. For any of you gardeners out there, there's going to be a pot swap for and recycling effort. If you have all those plastic things that came with your gardens, here's your chance to turn them in, get ones that you might be able to use better, or just at least get them and know that they will be recycled. That's Friday, June 26th through the following Monday, the 29th. The one thing is they asked is don't bring anything that's PVC. So, and if you have any questions as to what is PVC or what they would take, give the good folks at Cooperative Extension a call.
You're referring to potting soil containers, not pot swap.
Flower pot swap.
Yes. Okay.
Thank you for that clarification.
Carol Chalk.
Oh, and I'm about to talk about farm workers. I wanted to take this opportunity to thank those who came to speak to us tonight on the farm workers resolution and make sure that you understood a little bit about the process that we'll go through here. And we, you know, we certainly invite you to stay and hear the whole thing, but since it won't come up until later in the agenda, I just wanted to make sure you understood that and that we won't be insulted if you don't wait us out. I think it would probably take, I don't know, 15 minutes, a half an hour or longer before we will now discuss whether to actually talk about this tonight and add it to the agenda. And then if we do so, it wouldn't come up to the end of the whole rest of our agenda. And I do want to explain a little bit about why after a decade in the Assembly of various elements of this and 4 years being introduced in the Senate, we learned only a week ago of the State Farm Bureau effort, a week ago yesterday, asking us to pass something in opposition to this act. And knowing that we have a $60 million agricultural sector here in Tompkins County, and that we have farm owners who have been incredibly honest and caring and with great scruples here in Tompkins County, but who compete with bigger businesses across the state and the nation. I just wanted to learn a little bit more about it. And so I called a guy in Albany on a website that had, a list that went on for 3 or 4 pages about various labor organizations, ministries, churches, and other organizations who support this, and said, can you tell me a bit more about it? And I had the opportunity to learn a little bit more about the unusual set of circumstances that has led to a unique opportunity for us to weigh in now, and that the State Senate actually might meet before we have a chance to do so again. So I thought I'd introduce something for us to talk about it tonight. I learned that some things you might not know, that there are 28 bipartisan supporters, co-sponsors of the legislation in the Senate now. It needs 32 to pass. There are 45 senators who have indicated the support for it, and that this all grew out of an effort starting in the Assembly that our own Marty Luster had helped to really spearhead sort of more than a decade ago. And I had occasion to talk to Marty last night. And so while you are all still here and not giving up on us, I thought I'd pass along something about why I called him and what he said. I realized he was the co-prime sponsor of elements of this bill, and asked him, so what lessons can you give us from the years you spent working on this? And he was very clear. He said, please give people the message that that our own Tompkins County small farms comply with these kinds of things already. These aren't our Tompkins County small family farms that are in opposition. That the State Farm Bureau is not based locally. There is some support locally, but it is not. That this really is a very organized effort by larger agribusiness in a very well-funded effort, because I've seen things all over the press and have heard about their approaches just in this last week since it got introduced to the Senate on June 1st, I believe, finally came out of committee after all those years and got to the agenda. And he did say that in all of the years that he worked on elements of this act, before it became the unified bill it is now, and then after it did, he didn't have big opposition here in Tompkins County. In fact, he had farm owners who were willing to come to Albany and speak in its behalf. So to my colleagues, I'll just say that that this is an issue that has been in the public agenda in New York State for many years. It's 75 years after the Federal Fair Labor Standards Act was passed that covered most other workers. It's 40 years, I learned, since Robert Kennedy tried to spearhead federal protection of this issue on the federal level. A decade since Marty Luster, and you know, I'm just hoping we'll be able to talk about it tonight. So, thank you, and thank you for coming.
Thank you, Carol and Dooley Kiefer.
Thanks, Frank. You may or may not remember that there was an earlier round of concern about gas leases for drilling in Tompkins County, and I don't remember how many years ago now, five, six. The EMC at that time developed a model lease for individual residents, and Cooperative Extension worked on a different version. So that there is a history of us doing this even before this current all-out effort, which is so impressive. One of the first speakers tonight mentioned the fact that it was both farm workers and domestic workers who were excluded from Fair Labor Practices Act. And today there are 200,000 workplaces in New York State where these standards do not apply, and they're not farms, they're homes, where housekeepers and nannies and caregivers for the elderly have no protections. And so I hope that that Carol's enthusiasm for this farm worker effort might next extend to the Domestic Workers Bill of Rights, which is also sitting up there in Albany. That's all.
Thank you. Ty Randall.
I just would like to express my dismay, I guess, if anything, over Carol's dissertation. I wish you as a chair would learn how to control some of that. It isn't on the floor yet. We shouldn't be discussing it. So I'm a little bit annoyed.
Thank you. If there are no further, I'm not going to give you a second. No, we can respond privately to Tyke. He has the right to share his opinion. We're going to move on. If there's no further legislators wish to speak, I'm going to actually mix up the agenda. I do not think we have a municipal official here to report, or do we? Okay. Instead of moving on to chair's report, et cetera, I'm going to ask that we move up a budget item. Mike Hattery is vice chair, wondering if you could move the TC3 item, because we have
I think Pam's going to move that.
Okay.
Committee.
Yes, I'd like to move Resolution J. It's the resolution authorizing... Oh, that's the wrong one. Resolution K, adoption of 2009-2010 budget, Tompkins-Cortland Community College, and I so move.
Is there a second? Frank Proto seconds. And Carl Haynes is here. I know we have other staff from TC3 here to answer any questions. Is there discussion? Julie Kiefer?
I will support this because they certainly need our share of the funding. I just wish we were doing more for them.
Thank you. Any further deliberations? Martha?
Well, I support TC3 too. Through my values, my priorities, but this is not a typical year at all, and I went to the TC3 meeting where they have us and the Cortland County legislators come and got a full hour and a half or so to hear about the budget and then time to talk with the Cortland legislators and then a second meeting with them after a legislature meeting. I am sure that every one of our 27 departments would love to have that kind of opportunity to, you know, at length talk about their budgets and, you know, have questions answered. I just can't support this, and I'm sorry, Carl, but this is, we're looking at a minus 6.25 target, 6.25% target to every one of our departments. And then when you factor the fringe, the increase in pension benefits, the cost of the pensions that we're really having to look at for next year, that comes out to approximately 10 or 11% cut, minus 10 or 11% to every one of our departments. These are not typical days. Business is not business as usual. And I just, I mean, it seems to me, and I spoke with another legislator this just before the meeting, flat funding from us, no increase, would be generous in this climate. So I'm sorry, I just can't support this. I have heard, I mean, I education's critical. I've been an educator my whole life. I have, you know, educators in my family. I think they do a great job, but... frankly, I think every one of our departments does a great job and does essential things and things that we don't have a choice about doing. And yet the taxpayers can't support, I'd be willing to go to 4% levy increase, but that's still a $2 million cut in our expenditures next year. So I just can't see how to justify this. Now, the increase in the budget is about $124,000. I understand that's for both partners. That's the increase. So we're about 62% of that, the balance between Cortland and Tompkins. So that comes to just under $77,000. The average FTE for a county employee is $50,000, including fringe. So if we support a 3% increase here, that's an FTE, 1.5 FTEs right off the bat that we're not going to be able to pay next year out of county departments. And I got to say, I have asked, a lot of people say, well, the college is different. It's not a county department. TC, TCAT or library, those are different. I truly can't understand what difference that makes. We don't control the budgets of the human service agencies or cooperative extension. Tompkins Community Action, they're going to be under our target. So I've tried to hear the logic. I don't understand that logic. I've tried to move other people in the same direction and not moved any other votes, but I just want to let people know that I'm going to vote against this because I just think it's the wrong thing in this climate.
Thank you, Martha. I have Leslin, then Kathy, then Frank.
So I had a very hard time with this, like I did with so many other things in terms of budget increase, especially, and I always do, because the TC3 budget comes before we even start our budget process. And but I appreciate some of the back and forth and being at least one of the meetings where we all try, Portland as well as Tompkins County Legislature, try to meet some compromise. It's difficult for me when I know that internally our departments are probably going to be looking at, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, probably 11% cuts that they have to absorb. But I had this interesting experience this past Friday at the award ceremony for the African Latino Society of Ithaca High School that recognizes graduating seniors of color. In previous years, I've gone to the ceremony every year. In previous years, probably 9 out of the 12 graduating seniors, I'll just pick that number, will be going to colleges outside of this county. This year, 9 out of 12 are going to TC3. I'd say 9 out of 10 are going to TC3. They recognize the quality education that they get. They recognize being able to stay local and so many other factors that matter, that there isn't a lot of money out there for scholarships and grants and any number of things. But it's not just that we're settling. We're going to some place where the education is key, it's quality, and people actually do pay attention to it. And so as I deliberated for myself over am I going to support or not support this, that was one of the moving factors for me, and it might be a very selfish reason. Like Duliet, just as soon try to give more, but I know in this year I can't support that. And so I will support this resolution tonight, though it's still pretty heavy in my heart knowing what will happen with our departments, and we're not even in the middle of our budget negotiations just yet. This always is a hard time for me with this one.
Thank you, Leslie. Kathy, then Frank.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not going to lecture people or quote facts and figures. I just want to explain my vote. Some of y'all won't be surprised that I see this as a race and class issue, and that is because of the economic downturn, what people who are put out of work do, if they can, is they go back to work. What people, as Leslie pointed out, do is they cut back their plans. If they were going to go out of state or to a more expensive college, they reassess the situation, and they figure out that we've got a gym right here in Tompkins County, well, in Tompkins-Cortland region, and they decide to go to TC3. It's a terrific school, I'll admit. I've been there. I'll probably take classes there again. The personal service and the quality of the instruction is second to none. It's an investment. Yeah, it's a tough choice. It's tough because we have to look our department heads in the face and say, we're making the tough decision. I think that on balance, when you factor in that during an economic downturn, people of less means and people who historically have been underrepresented and had discrimination pressed on them end up suffering more, contributing a fraction more to TC3 is a wise economic development investment. And that's why I'm doing it. It's not easy. I have apologies all around. Apologies it can't be more. Apologies we can't triple that amount and somehow spread it between the departments. It's my call, and that's what I had to do.
Thank you, Kathy. Frank, then Dooley, then Carol.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Some of us taught at TC3. As an adjunct for 9 years. And I admire what, Carl as the third president certainly has done. And I think it's important to remember that we arrived at this 3% as a compromise with Cortland County. We've talked often around this table about building consortiums and working regionally and whatnot. This is one that really exists because every year we go through this with Cortland County. Recognizing that they've probably taken it on the chin harder than we have economically, and they probably have more people that are taking advantage, as both Kathy and Leslie have mentioned already, of the educational opportunity. We did ask Joe to go back and look at the exchange
chargeback.
Say again?
Chargeback.
The chargeback situation, and we found that the variables are just too extensive, and they can't be programmed for us to come up with any other number that would be justified. Carl, I have to admit to you that I was one of the people that said I could support a 0% increase, a 1% increase, a 2% increase, and we settled on 3%. So I hear what Martha has indicated, but I certainly believe that this is a compromise for both counties, because I know Cortland was really wrestled with this. I'm going to support the 3%. This is the first of a series of prioritizations that we're going to have to do with our own budget, and it's going to be tough, and nobody denies that. I think this is going to be a rough year for everyone, and for everyone that's in government. Maybe that's why some of us are scratching our heads about do we want to live through another budget season. But I am going to support this.
Thank you, Frank. I have Dooley, then Carol. I'd like to move to a vote after that.
I just wanted to say that I didn't know what Martha was going to raise as her issues tonight. I believe TC3 has a different fiscal year than ours, and your comments seem to assume that our budget that we finally vote on will include all of the cuts that we've asked our county administrator to have the departments deal with for a draft budget. And since I'm profoundly hopeful that we're not going to wind up cutting them so severely, I'm not sure I would accept that as a given the way you seem to have. That's all.
Thank you, Dooley. On to Carol.
Yeah, I will support this. You were a county with such an emphasis on higher education, and we see such an expensive version of it here. And we've got our own kids coming out of high school. And this is an era where there aren't a lot of jobs. And for those that we encourage to get an education, those are the kids we're not going to see back in some of the rest of our system. I was particularly impressed by Carl's citing of the statistic that in a country, in a nation right now, where only 20% of college graduates have jobs for next year, 67%, I think you said, of our TC3 graduates at least know what they're doing next year. I assume whether that's a job or further education.
70% that have jobs.
70%. Okay, so we're doing something right, and I think we should continue to do so, even though it'll be tough.
I'd like to actually go to a vote, Carl, if I could. Are we ready to vote? Very briefly, Martha.
Just very briefly. Everything everybody said is true. I just have to say this is, even if we... Dooley, I don't expect us to accept all the cuts that people are looking at in the target, but if we're going to get anywhere near 3%, we're going to be having to take a lot of them. And I think our department heads would be thrilled with zero at this point, with flat funding. So,
could I respond to the concerns that Martha's raising?
Briefly, sure.
I'll do my best to be brief, but I think she's raising some very important points. And certainly we're not, you know, all the county departments certainly are very vital functions, each in their own strategic importance to county government. Clearly, the community college is not a part of the structure of county government. And, you know, the funding structure is different with the co-sponsorship that the county has. And your funding of our operating budget roughly is around 7.5%. But I want to make two, I think, important points. One is to recount the history, because there seems to be an underlying notion here that we haven't paid our dues and so on. 13 years ago, we had between a $1 and $2 million reduction in our budget, okay, as a result of an enrollment decline, at a time when our budget was around $14 million. We had to lay off and reduce positions between 20 and 25 positions on a 200-employee base at that time. It was a painful process. We didn't ask the sponsors to bail us out at that time. We managed it ourselves. And since then, you know, the college, depending on how enrollment comes out next year, has grown between 90 and 100%, while our employment base has grown approximately 40%. So we continue to look at lean office kinds of techniques to continue to try to operate as efficiently as possible. The second point, I think, is a series of points, and I'd refer you to page 11 in our budget book. But I think I want to just point out that The college, the county sponsors support for our budget. We've taken our lumps, and we continue to do so. When you look at on page 11, the bottom, where it talks about sponsor share. The sponsor share, when you look at it on a per student basis, is $28 less than last year, approximately 2.5 to 3% less next year than it is this year. The second lowest rate, when you look at the 10-year history that's listed there, the second lowest rate in the last 10 years. If you want to look at the state share, look at the state share between the 10-year-ago figure and the proposed figure for next year. That's about a 19% increase. Look at the county sponsor share from the same period of time. That's a 21% decrease. So it's, 10 years ago, your share, the sponsors, now I'm lumping you with Cortland County, was approximately 20% of our budget. That share today is 12.3%. So we've continued to have to, trim our wings, operate efficiently, continue to try to do more with less. Next year's budget is we're growing between 8 and 10% next year. Our staff is growing 1.6%. So we are operating, I think, in as lean a way as we possibly can while continuing to provide the best possible services we can that I think are expected of us. So I hope that helps you, Martha, and maybe others in our listening audience that might be concerned about whether or not we're getting something very generous here. In fact, on a per student basis next year, we're taking a 2.5 to 3% hit.
Thank you, Carl.
You might notice that the state is maintaining their aid. They're not cutting us on a per student basis.
Thank you, Carl. That was important to summarize for those listening as well as those who are here. Are ready to vote? All in favor of Resolution K adopting the 2009-2010 Tompkins Cortland Community College budget? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. And opposed. That passes 11-3. Thank you very much, Carl and Blixey.
Thank you.
I know there are many people waiting for many resolutions tonight, some of which aren't even on the agenda yet. It's a delicate balance here, so I'm actually going to go back to the regular agenda, unless people inform me that they have an emergency they need to get to another place for. So there is no municipal officials. Under Chair's report, I just have a few just quick notes and reminders. Our health department has been heroic in their handling of the H1N1 virus, and we've had a few more cases since we were last together. I think they're under a lot of stress, and I think we have to give them our deepest accolades in terms of how they're handling it professionally and getting their information out all across the community. I also wanted to remind people that you've gotten some emails regarding our evaluation of our four direct reports. There's a deadline coming up. I believe it's next week. I hope you can do that either electronically or those who've asked for paper forms to turn those in, because it's a fairly tight timeline. Tomorrow we have a library budget meeting. I think it's in your calendars. I want to remind you of. And next Monday we have a legislature department head retreat later in the day. That's the 22nd. So just upcoming meetings. I want to make sure you are on your calendar and upcoming accountability commitments.
Can you highlight the library meeting tomorrow? What is
tomorrow? 4 to 5:30. Budget presentation in the Borg Warner Room. Next Monday's meeting, which is the 22nd, is our joint legislature department head meeting. It's 4:30 to 6:30. Remind me where that is. It's a town hall?
Town hall.
Town of Ithaca Hall.
Can I ask a question about that?
Sure.
Will that be taped?
I don't believe it is. No.
Okay. I'm going to have to be late for that, and I'm sorry.
Okay. And other questions, Martha?
Yes. Can you let us know when the next budget community advisory panel and the next direct reports about the group that's working on the direct report evaluations, when are those meetings coming up?
I believe June 29th is the next community advisory panel. I can get you the time. I don't have it in front of me, but I can get it circulated by email or by paper too regarding the next legislative direct reports meeting. I think it's a bit of a ways off because we have these deadlines that stakeholders, direct reports themselves, and this legislature have to submit their evaluations first before we begin to compile. So it's at least 2 or 3 weeks off. Thank you. On to I have no chair appointments. On to our report from County Administrator Joe Mariano.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think for the past three meetings, I've spent my time on budget issues. I'm going to do the same thing tonight to continue that trend. I assure you I'm not a one-trick pony, but this is the one issue that I think is going to dominate our discussion for the next several months. At the last meeting, you approved the spending targets for the departments at 6.25%, and I emailed you last Thursday to report the reaction of our department heads on Wednesday when we began to talk about the actual implementation of those spending reductions on their budgets. And my hope is, in taking a look through that email, and I'm going to spend a little time tonight to make sure we provide clarity, that we all have a common understanding of what those cuts are and the impacts that are associated with those cuts. First, to the basic starting point of what we did two Tuesdays ago in establishing the spending target. To be able to balance our budget and increase property taxes by a maximum of 3%, we need to reduce our expenditures by $2.4 million. Now, in coming to that 2.4, and this is old ground that we're plowing, we've made certain assumptions about revenues that might be available to us, and we've challenged ourselves to find additional revenues. We've also made certain assumptions about wage growth that could happen next year. And it's after taking those assumptions into account that we've identified a spending reduction target of $2.4 million. We will need to make that reduction over a limited base of our expenditures. We can spread that cost, that cut, over about $38.4 million worth of expenditures that we have some control over. Those are the discretionary expenditures, the mandated responsibilities, and fringe benefits associated with those things. That's our spending reduction base of $38.4 million. As I put in the email, the spending target is at that point simple division. It's $2.4 million worth of cuts spread over $38.4 million worth of our reduction base, and we need to reduce that then. That's numerator and denominator. The reduction is 6.25%. That's the basis of the spending targets that we approved two Tuesdays ago. The important point that needs to be made there is, again, in that base, we have fringe benefits. So when we allocate those spending targets to the departments, we have to look not only at what you see on, call it, page one of their budget, which shows their own net direct spending, exclusive of fringe benefits. We also have to look at the reductions in the fringe benefits associated with those departments. We have to cut both sides. And that's, unfortunately, on page two of the budget. So when department heads were looking and assessing how would a 6.25% decrease affect me, their eye went to probably where my eye might have gone. That's to page one. What would it mean to reduce direct departmental spending, net direct departmental spending, by 6.25%? Not taking into account that there's a second page and there's fringe benefits that are related to their operations. So again, in assessing these reductions, we have to take both of those costs into account. You know that a couple of years ago, a decision was made to split those fringe benefits from the department's budget. So that's what created the two-page situation. And I think that's what's led to the confusion about the way you calculate the cut and the impact of the cut. I'd just like to go back to the simple issues that we're dealing with here, without underestimating the complexity of what we need to do and the difficulty of what we need to do. $2.4 million has to be reduced. Spending has to be reduced to meet our goal. To be able to do that, we need to reduce net departmental spending and fringe benefit costs by 6.25%. And here's an issue that we have to recognize and deal with. Because our fringe costs are growing faster than other parts of our budget, more of our allowance, more of our available resources will need to go to pay for fringe benefits in 2010. That means that there's less resources available for everything else. That fringe cost is going up. So the resources available to us need to be committed to cover those fringe costs. So to be able to achieve our spending targets, the net departmental spending, the amount that each department sees on its part of its page of the budget, as Martha has indicated earlier, will be reduced by more than 6.25%. It's only when you add back in their fringe benefits and look at how much of the total spending they would have to reduce, you get to the 6.25% cut level. Again, the impact is significant, as we've all agreed. $2.4 million in spending reductions is a difficult challenge to be able to address. But that's the target we've set for ourselves. And again, as we begin this process, I think it's important that we're all on the same page in terms of understanding what this spending reduction means and again, the impact of what we're talking about.
Thank you, Jeff.
Yeah. I mean, if anybody has any detailed questions, I'm happy to take those probably after the meeting or sometime. Generally, I'll be happy to take
Thank you, Jeff.
Questions. Sorry.
Dooley Keeper.
This is not a detailed question. Is it conceivable that the savings garnered through the health care consortium, which will reduce the rate of health insurance, might cancel out the increase in our pension contributions?
I'd hope so. And Dooley, we have assumed restrained increases in our health costs already. So we have already assumed the numbers that Steve Losey will talk about tonight, which is a 6% growth in our health benefit costs. The fringe change, we all know, is because of pension costs.
That's why I linked those.
I'm going to cut you off, Joe. I think you've answered your question.
Fine.
I know that Steve is probably anxious to go to his vote now, but I'm not going to go there either. Quickly on Joe's report. Martha?
So when fringe was taken out, this might be a normal question because you were here then, when fringe was taken out of department budgets, that was meant so that we were told there could be savings in the management of somehow. Not that I understand it or understood it at the time, but that it was going to save us money because there would be sort of centralized management of the fringe. Are you talking about changing that?
No.
Or are you just talking about the bookkeeping part of it? That means, I mean, in other words, right, if our fringe were staying the same, we wouldn't have this issue. It's because we're stuck with the pension increase.
That explains 99% of the impact that we're dealing with.
You're not changing the idea of actually centrally managing the fringe costs?
We're not, although it's a policy discussion that probably should happen, whether we should go back to a decentralized fringe approach or not. But for the moment, it's just for the purpose of computing the target.
Thank you. If there's no further questions, we're going to move on to our county attorney, Jonathan Wood.
I have no report.
Thank you, Jonathan. David Squires, finance director. Thank you. Frank.
David, there was we were treated to a news article yesterday or the day before that showed that there was a slight increase in county spending, the economic report.
The index.
However, Ilya couched it in, we ain't recovered yet, but we need a boost in home sales. Can you comment on perhaps what positive effect that might have had on us, sales tax-wise, if any?
Well, I am privy to the information we have from last month's retail tax distributions, and they're still below last year. The decline has narrowed somewhat. I don't know what the spread's going to be, but it hadn't flattened out yet. But the rate of decline is narrowing
from 8
to 6, you know. So,
thank
and
you.
Mike Sigler had a quick question.
David, did we have the auction?
We had the auction. We sold four properties. Two were abandoned houses. The total receipts were around $65,000 for the four properties, and we made a net gain of $29,000.
There's no further questions. We'll move on to resolutions to be added to or withdrawn from the agenda. I believe we have four to be added to, so we'll take them one at a time. Nathan Shinagawa.
I'd like to add Resolution O, Award of Contract Telecommunications Services.
Is there a second? Leslie McLean Claiborne, all in favor of adding this to the agenda?
Aye.
there any opposed? It's on the agenda now. It's passed unanimously. Any further resolutions to add? We have N, M, and L. Carol Chalk.
I would like to move to add Resolution L, support of New York State Bill A1867/S2247, establishing the Farm Workers Fair Labor Practices Act to grant farm workers collective bargaining rights, workers' compensation, unemployment benefits, a day of rest, and other labor protections provided to other workers in New York. Am I allowed to?
No, just move it right front now to add. And Kathy Luce, for our seconds, is there discussion before we vote to add? All in favor of adding?
Wait, this discussion.
Carol Chalk.
Okay. With apologies to Tyke, I moved up a lot of what I was going to say because I really did not expect to have people here in our audience, and I thought that they deserved, I didn't expect them to stay, and I thought they ought to hear a little bit more about how this came about. So with those apologies, I just want to talk about why this is timely right now. If the New York State Senate had met on schedule, this would have come onto their agenda on June 1st, and it would now no longer have been an issue. And they now could meet again in the next 3 weeks before we would have the chance to take it up again. That, in turn, gave opportunity for us to hear an awful lot in opposition. So... I guess I've made my other points that that this really is 28 co-sponsors, 45 who might support, and a big blitz being delivered last minute by agribusiness, including resolutions that came to us last Monday, that clearly are coming to counties across New York State, who might pass them. And this is a unique opportunity to have Tompkins County weigh in and be one county upstate New York that might present, that at least would consider whether we want to present a different point of view that could make a difference to the discussion in Albany. So that's why I'd like us to take it up tonight. Thank you.
Just for the public or anybody who's sitting here, the reason why we're debating whether to add it normally, you can get an item on the agenda by going through committee, or a member can file it 7 days in advance. This was not filed 7 days in advance, so it takes 10 votes to add it to the agenda, which is why we're debating it. I have Greg, Frank, Martha, and I see other hands.
I think with all due respect to Carol, I think this needs to go to committee. There's a lot of material here that one who's voting or being asked to vote on this issue needs to consider. I'm very much a supporter of workers' rights and collective bargaining, but agriculture is an important part of my district as well. It's a very difficult time for agriculture folks to comment on something like this. They're all very busy doing something other than reading legislation. I haven't had a chance to learn about this or talk to my constituents, and for those reasons and many more, I think this should go to committee. I won't be supporting this.
Thank you, Greg. Frank Proto?
Yeah, I'd like to join Greg in his concern. I admire the one farmer that was able to come tonight from the city of Ithaca. I was unable to pull anybody from the field out in my district because they're out farming. There's some concern about this, and I would ask that our own advisory board, the Ag and Farmland Protection Board, hasn't even had a chance to review this. We'll be meeting a little later this month, and with all due respect to Carol, I hope that your optimistic view of the Senate coming back into session soon comes to pass. But I have a feeling we may be able to deal with this bill again or this resolution again at our next meeting. The Ag and Farmland Board meets a little later this month, and I would ask perhaps that we have a chance at that group, which is advisory to this group, at least have an opportunity to weigh in on this. Thank you.
Just to discuss process, if it gets on the agenda, we can discuss where it might go or how to handle it. But it's not even on the agenda yet. So we have Martha, Will, Pam, I think I saw Mike Sigler's hand. Martha?
Yes, thanks. I want to thank Carol, especially for all her hard work on this. I know she tried to get it on, into the packet, the regular packet, and there was a glitch with how much information needed to be provided by a certain time. I agree this is really timely. If we don't do this, then the farm workers wait, another year, very likely. I don't know, the state senate is going to do what we tell them, but the point is, this is the time when we need to speak on it. By the way, the farm that Mary Lair works is in Dryden. She's not a farm in the city of Ithaca. So I would like to really strongly support this. I think there is strong support on this legislature, and I think it's only fair to let us vote on it tonight. I would like us to have the opportunity to vote on this measure tonight. Some of us feel we do know enough about it, and I think it's time to do it.
Will Burbank.
Martha's made most of the points I've made. But unfortunately, I think Frank also made a point. I think the situation in Albany with the Senate and, quite frankly, due to some of the machinations of our Republican friends, has made maybe rendering this whole situation moot, and that is a true tragedy. But I urge us to at least give the courtesy of a vote tonight. And
Pam, then Mike Sigler, then Kathy. Pam?
I pass.
Mike Sigler?
I just want to mention, I represent a farming community, and I haven't talked to really a whole lot of farmers about this. I do want to mention, though, that Farm Bureau has come out against this. And I can't really paint Farm Bureau as some type of agribusiness site. I mean, I know all the guys in Farm Bureau. They have been, one of the consistent voices for small farms throughout New York State. And I would like to at least sit down with them and find out why, what they're against. There may be sections of this bill that they're okay with. But there must be something that's hanging them up, and I would like to find out what that is and see if maybe they have a better bill out there, frankly. We're not talking about Monsanto here or Cargill. I mean, Farm Bureau represents thousands of farmers throughout New York State, so I would like to have them at least weigh in before we make a vote like this.
Kathy, and then I'll speak.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For those of y'all that know me as a process demon, you might have found my seconding adding this to the agenda a little bit hypocritical, so I wanted to explain to you why. I got the email from the Farm Bureau opposing the legislation and saw what a slim time frame it was. And what I thought was, if somebody's going to bring it forward, I have to support this. And there's four resolutions being added to the agenda tonight. It's not a practice that I support. This circumstance calls for it, and if we can get it on the agenda, we'll get to talk more about it.
And I will be allowing it to go on the agenda, but I would caution us that this is not a precedent I would like to be setting. One of the assets, one of the hallmarks of public bodies is our deliberativeness. And when we send things to a committee, and even when member items come in a timely fashion, it gives us time to process, answer the questions that others have raised about, have advisory boards weighed in, have we had enough time ourselves to read? We've had several versions come to us over the weekend. I think the issue itself deserves to have a methodical process through our legislature, but given some of the constraints that we're being given, what's happening in New York State, I will vote to add this to the agenda. Are we ready to vote on adding this to the agenda? All in favor of adding Resolution L to the agenda this evening? One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, ten. And opposed? One, two, three, four. That passes 10-4, and it's going to be on the agenda. Unfortunately, member items are the last thing on the agenda. Let's juggle them around. So 10-4. Are there any other items to add to the agenda? Nathan, do you have some?
Yes, I have two other resolutions. I have Resolution M, authorization to execute quitclaim deed properties redeemed before county auction, and Resolution N, authorization to execute quitclaim deeds sale foreclosure properties at public auction.
Does someone want to second both of them? Julie Kiefer?
And by the way, the reason why that these the three that I have here have to be added to the agenda is because the Government Performance and Workforce Relations Committee meets Friday before the legislature meeting, and so it creates some
some problems with adding it to the agenda regularly. But it did. These resolutions did go through committee.
Okay, we will vote on M first. All in favor of adding M to the agenda? Are there any opposed? That's unanimous. And resolution N, also quick claim D. All in favor of adding it? Aye. Are there any opposed? That's also on the agenda, and we'll go through government performance workforce relations.
Thank you.
Thank you all. And now we'll go back to our regular agenda process, which begins with our consent agenda. These are resolutions that are not expected to be controversial, that can pass in a single vote. And appointments. Do you have appointments in there? No, there's no appointments. So we'll start with the resolution A. I'll read these consent agenda. If you have a need to take them off, please let me know. This is resolution A revised.
Off.
Okay. Resolution B, this is from Planning, Development, and Environmental Quality Committee, authorizing the 2009 Federal Transit Administration Section 5307 grant application for Tompkins Consolidated Area Transit, TCAT, Gadabout, and Tompkins County.
Is that a revised one?
I didn't mark it as revised,
then,
but I'll...
Then let's take it off.
If it came out of committee this afternoon as revised, then it'll stay on consent as revised. Yes. Is that how it did? I didn't get the update. So that is revised, and it is on consent. Resolution C, award of tourism grant, tourism capital grants. Resolution D...
I'm sorry, off.
Okay, C is off. Resolution D, funding of tourism project grant. And Resolution E, funding of tourism marketing and advertising grant. Who'd like to move the consent agenda? Frank Proto moves it. Carol Chalk seconds. All in favor of the consent agenda?
Aye.
And are there any opposed? With those off. So you'll mark A, C, and E under the appropriate committees.
A, B, and C.
A, B. Yep, thank you. B passed. A?
No. Somebody pulled B.
No, B was not pulled. It was just noted that it was revised.
I beg your pardon.
A, C, and E are under the appropriate committee. A under GPWR, and C and E under PDEQ. No, B is pet. E. E, as in Edward, is got pulled.
Who pulled it?
Did someone pull that?
No. No.
Sorry, I marked it as pulled. So that went through on consent.
C is on.
So only two are off, A and C. Okay, we'll start with our reports. Health and Human Services Committee, Frank Proto, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The Health Committee met on the 9th. I just wanted to highlight one or two items. I appreciate what Mike has already said about the Health Department and their initiatives, and I think Alice would be very appreciative of passing your kind words on to the department. I'm hesitant to mention how many swine flu cases we have because each time I mention it, the next day another one pops up, so I'm not mentioning it. But the we had quite a report because these reports, as we're discovering in the Rules Committee, are supposed to address items that are not on the agenda. Didn't we discover that yesterday, did we? I wanted to mention to you that you should have received a copy of the 2008 Municipal Youth Services Report and Recreation Partnership. The reason that this is worthy of highlighting is that Nancy and Janice Johnson gave us quite an overview at the committee level of the number of youth in this county that are touched by the programs that this group covers. I just want to read you one number. 8,436 unduplicated count. There's 8,436 youths in the county that are taking advantage in some manner, shape, or form of youth programs. And that covers every single town in the county and the city of Ithaca. The numbers probably will go up because in economic stressful times as we're in, I think we're going to be seeing more kids taking advantage of the programs because they're right here and a lot of the towns are participating in them. All of the towns and the city is participating in them. In addition to that, we had several program updates.
The Human Rights Watch report was distributed, and I want to thank Martha for alerting me to this because I believe it also went to public safety. And Bob DeLuca and the doctor that I'm always mispronouncing this, Baragosian? Is that close enough? Thank you. I apologize, Doc. Gave us quite an update on their work in the jail and how this report came about. And it's very positive. Tompkins County ought to take a bow because of the work. And I'm sure Martha may have more to say on the public safety because part of it falls under that committee as well. I will digress on one item. The budget, of course, is on everybody's lips, and it's a major concern for the departments that report to my committee because they have some, if not the majority, of the largest budgets in the county between health, mental health, and DSS, and it's not going to be an easy year. I won't go into any more than that. The next committee meeting is July 14th, and for those of you that don't have your calendars out, that's Bastille Day. So we expect you to come wrapped in the French flag if you have an opportunity.
Thank you, Frank.
You're welcome.
Resolution F, if there's no questions, and it's a roll call vote. Go ahead.
Okay. I'd like to move Resolution F. It's on the agenda. Appropriation from Contingent Fund Terminal Pay Reimbursement Health Department.
Is there a second? Will Burbank seconds. Is there discussion? Dooley Keeper.
In the third, whereas, please add after reimbursement to the department.
Is that friendly, Frank and Will?
Yeah.
To the department.
That's just cleaning up. Yeah,
okay.
Because that's the process.
Just a short form roll call.
Ms. Keeper?
Yes.
Ms. Herrera?
Yes.
Does anyone wish to be reported as a no vote? Okay, that passes. If there's no further comment in that committee, we'll move on to facility. Nathan.
Hey, Frank. In terms of the flu, where I work right now over at Guthrie System, we've been talking about it, and I do a lot of emergency preparedness stuff now, and we've been talking about the H1N1 and about the swine flu and how, since there is going to be vaccine production to protect people against the swine flu, what may suffer is actual vaccinations for the seasonal flu, that there actually may not be enough production capability for that. And so that's something to just keep, you know, to keep in your mind and on the committee's mind, you know, talking to Alice and whatnot, because that's a distinct
comment on that?
Concern.
Thanks for the alert. Alice did mention that at committee meeting, and that at the present time she wasn't aware that there'd be a shortfall in the regular flu vaccine, but everybody's concerned about the swine flu vaccine and gearing up for production of that. They're hoping they have enough.
Yeah.
And the health department will be the key distribution point for that in the county.
Yeah.
So thanks for the alert.
We'll move on to Facilities Infrastructure Committee. Leslie McBean, Claiborne Chair.
F and I will meet on Thursday.
Great.
This week.
Thank you. Frank Proto.
Leslie, would you thank whoever did it, please, for putting on the front page of the Ithaca Journal the list of roads that are going to be worked on and the approximate dates? I selfishly have used that in all three towns with the highway departments and giving them out because it was very helpful to see the staging of the dates. So who do you think?
Talk to our lovely public information officer as well as administration and the Commissioner of Planning and Public Works.
Well, does Ed get thanked again?
I'll take the credit for
twice
it, but
in the same
thank these guys.
Thanks. Okay, Marcia.
We're going to move on to Government Performance and Workforce Relations Committee. Nathan Shinagawa, Chair, and after your report, could you move Resolution G as your first resolution?
Sure, I can do that. Government Performance and Workforce Relations Committee met last Friday, had a discussion about a number of items, most of which have resolutions today, so I won't actually get into too much detail about those. We did get an update from Joe about the dashboard and new numbers that are out there. And I don't know, Joe, is that going to be distributed to all the legislators, or has it been already?
It can be. We were going to distribute the quarterly, but we can can distribute the monthly, and we can also post it on the on our webpage.
Uh-huh. Okay. And then also we had a very lively discussion about assessments and specifically about a resolution that our former county legislator, Nancy Shuler, brought forth regarding not having value, not increasing assessments on properties when for cases of regular maintenance. And we had a interesting discussion about that and basically how, well, first off, any change in the real property law would have to take place at the state level regarding that issue. We can't create local exemptions unless we're granted the ability to create those local exemptions. But it was a lively discussion, and I can go into a lot of detail about it, but I won't here. But if anybody has any questions about that, I'm more than willing to talk about it. I want to just go straight to the resolutions here because they're pretty self-explanatory.
Wait a minute. One question.
Nate. Yeah.
Was your committee going to deal with the texting question?
The texting while driving question?
Public safety.
That's public safety, yeah.
On
all
right.
Can I ask a quick question on that?
Yeah.
On the texting?
No, on the other.
Yes.
It's my understanding we don't reassess for that.
No, yeah, and we don't. But here it gets a little tricky, though, because... that a well-maintained neighborhood in general will have better assessments. I mean, we'll have their values will be valued more highly than a neighborhood that is not as well-maintained. So in that sense, maintenance affects the property values, and that's why it gets tricky when you say that it won't, that you have to create an exemption totally for maintenance, because in a way it sort of does affect the value of the properties. So that's where it gets into this very long, and that's why we talked about it for 45 minutes.
And we're going to move on to Resolution G.
How about A?
Well, I'm going to do with G first because we have some people waiting. Dooley?
Curb appeal is taken into account with assessment.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yes.
So you
okay.
Don't have a problem.
All right. And so... moving on, I'll move Resolution G, authorization to enter into an agreement with the Greater Tompkins County Healthcare Consortium for New York State Shared Municipal Services Program, and I so move.
And seconded by Mike Hattery, is there discussion? Kathy Lou Serrera.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Nathan.
I'm not going to support this. It's my belief, based on what I've heard, that not only may there be some unintended consequences to this, but also that as it's presently structured, Tonka County will be assuming more of the risk. If any of you have been paying attention to the listservs lately that lit up at the proposal of consolidation of local governments, it's very interesting to see how, in theory, something can look very good, but when you start thinking about the impact that it'll actually have to taxpayers of the county versus the impact that our present system is having, I'm not convinced myself personally that it will be a net gain for county taxpayers, and that's why I'm not going to support this.
Nathan is next.
I'll let other people speak first.
Greg Stevenson and Martha.
I, too, won't be supporting this at this time. I don't think we know enough or have had enough firm answers to enter into this kind of an agreement. One thing that concerns me is the requirement of 2,000 or more contracts to comply with Article 47 of the state insurance law. I don't think it's a given that all the potential consortium members will join the consortium. I think that there are bargaining agents out there that have significant concerns with this and potentially legal challenges to their employer unilaterally getting their health insurance from somewhere else. I don't think we've heard what happens if the consortium does get over 2,000 contracts and in a subsequent year falls below 2,000 contracts. Can the consortium continue to exist? As of last week, the consultant told us that there isn't really a clear answer on that yet. I think there's a lot of... this has the potential to save some money, but I haven't seen enough evidence that it will. I agree with Kathy. I think this, in the end, will cost Tompkins County taxpayers more. For those reasons, I won't support it at this time.
Thank you. I have Martha, then I'll go back to Nathan.
I think it's 3, maybe 4 years ago that Steve Witcher, together with Tim Joseph and Kathy Valentino, the three main players, really worked hard to try to get started a something like Council of Governments. And it was so we spent like 2 years meeting on particular issues, many municipal officials together with county officials trying to tackle consolidated courts and road patrol and highway issues and health care. I remember over and over again Steve saying, you know, we're looking at this holistically, that we're gonna put ourselves out there, that we believe that there are many opportunities for taxpayers as a whole to save money if we consolidate services, not necessarily consolidate government, very different thing. I think people are enormously supportive of consolidated services, shared services, even though they're leery of consolidations of familiar levels of government. Over and over, Steve would say, you know, what this thing we might do, whether it was the courts or health care or highway swapping, it might cost more on the county budget for county taxpayers out of your county pocket. But if you put all the town issues or city issues together, it'll save more money than it'll cost over in the other pocket. That was really the driving force behind what I think was fundamentally a very generous and open process that said all our taxpayers are all of our, you know, we're all the same taxpayers, and if you know that the county is willing, for example, to put ourselves at risk of having to pay extra, it's what we do with assessment, it's what we do with emergency response. These are programs that make much more sense at the county level. So they're on the county tab, they're not on municipal tab. So that was the fundamental idea behind the Council of Governments. The healthcare consortium was the original driving idea, and as Pam said earlier, the Council of Governments has shown itself tremendously useful on a lot of issues, and it will continue to be. But the sharing of healthcare costs is really the big enchilada in terms of saving dollars for the people who live in Tompkins County. And I mean, when we look at the whole federal discussion about health care costs is about the more people you cover, the less it costs per person. So it might cost, you know, this year's proposal estimate is that our costs, the county level, will go up 6%. I believe that's what it was last year, but I mean, I remember lots of years when our costs were going up 10, 18, 12% a year. It's estimated that without the consortium, our costs would be up 9% for 2010. So I believe it will save the county money immediately. It will save most municipalities' money, if not all municipalities' money, right away, and has the potential to save all of us even more down the road. I think this is something that the town of Ithaca has already, right, Herb? The town of Ithaca has already signed on. I believe the city is voting very soon, and I think with city plus the town plus the county, those are more than the 2,000 contracts. I think this is the time to show leadership. We have spent years working on this, right, Nathan?
Yeah.
And it's really the right thing to do.
Nathan is next.
Yeah. First off, I want to commend everybody that's worked on this. We have had. Let's see, we've been meeting every other week for well over 2 years, so I don't know how many meetings that makes, but it's definitely a lot of meetings. And those meetings don't just have representatives from the county and representatives from the city. They also have representatives from the towns and villages, as well as local providers, Cayuga Medical Center, and also health advocates in the area, like Betty Falco. And so and we've met every other week for those 2 years, and really, you know, tried to do everything that we possibly could to understand the situation, minimize risks, and basically make up what's turning out to be something that's great for the county and for county residents. I just want to go over a few things. First, on the whole idea that there's no evidence, well, all you have to do is point to all of the dozens of school districts. I mean, Steve, how many school districts have done this throughout?
Six.
Sorry.
We work with seven school consortiums, over 100 school districts currently.
Right. Right. Okay. So seven consortiums with hundreds of school districts. Right. And those consortiums, which our consultant Mr. Losey has directly worked with, has been able to save money, rein in costs, and have been able to protect the entities that they represent from large health insurance increases they would have got if they stayed with the private market or with big insurers. So the evidence is there that this has worked and it can work. Also, in terms of costs, well, you know, in the city of Ithaca, I believe last year their health insurance went up 20-some percent, was it?
It went up 24%.
24% in the city of Ithaca. This year, with the health consortium, it's going to go up 3. The county, it's going up 6%. We've had a trend line of it going up around 8 or 9% every single year. The town of Groton, I believe, is going to actually have a reduction in the cost of their health insurance by about 25%, right?
That's correct, yep.
Yeah. And so, as you can see, that's real money, real dollars. And so, it's pretty clear, I believe, and I will use strong words only because I feel very personally invested in this, that a vote against this is a vote against efficiency. I mean, it's a vote against saving money. And it's a vote for flush. I mean, if you vote against it, you're voting to flush money down the toilet. But on the other hand, voting for this is a vote for efficiency, it's a vote for common sense, and it's a vote for saving taxpayers' dollars. And I think that it's pretty clear that there's a lot of benefits here. And again, going on the risk side, you know, we're purchasing stop-loss insurance to protect ourselves against large claims. We're taking other types of protections to make sure that we minimize the risk. But like all things, there are inherent risks that we need to take. But this is something that I truly believe will save people money here in Tompkins County, and not just small amounts of money, but millions of dollars. Thanks.
I have four hands. I have Frank, and then Mike Sigrid after that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Nathan, I just heard you say more about this, except for the one time that Mr. Losey came on May 5th and made a presentation here. I, for one, have not been to any other meetings, and I've tried to keep up on whatever reading you've distributed, and I have the presentation that Steve gave us some time ago. If it's going to save it, you know, I'm from Missouri, I got to be shown. I want to go back to something Martha said, and something that you raised. If indeed this is efficient, and I hope it is, and if indeed there's savings, it seems to me that if all of the municipalities that are eligible to participate don't participate, the residents of the towns that do not participate are not enjoying the savings Martha outlined before. I mean, it's not Martha's fault, it's just that she brought it up. But that's what reminded me of it, that if you have a town or two or three, I think the town of Ithaca is in, you just mentioned the town of Groton, I believe the city of Ithaca is in or has expressed interest in joining. Can you mention, and I'm not giving up the floor here, but can you reel off the other towns that have agreed to join?
Let's see.
I know we've gotten 5 resolutions. Off the top of my head, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I have
which towns they were from.
You give me a couple minutes.
Go ahead. Yeah, you can do I'm coming up with the same analysis, perhaps, that Greg is. I'd like not to vote no on this. Mm-hmm. And this is June, I'm reading May 5th. Is there a reason we need to pass this tonight, or can we get some other additional information that may satisfy some of us in order to move ahead with this? The number that I'm reading off the front page of the PowerPoint that Steve presented shows the consortium estimates for 2010 in income are about $23 million. The expense side is about $19 million. Are any of those one-time payments, like the administrative fees, the consultants' fees, the internal coordination, which is $40,000 all by itself? I mean, you mentioned savings. If we're going to get whacked with a 6% increase in the county anyway, is if we don't do this, are we looking at the 8% that you mentioned?
Yeah, you're looking at the 8-9% if you don't do this.
I mean, it'd be nice if we had
summary. Our 6% number is not a speculation.
Let's Frank finish.
But that's where I'm going with this. I mean, can you tell me if there a need to pass this tonight, or can we put it off for a month or so until we get more information from the towns that have not quite signed on yet? And secondly, get some clarification about these numbers so we know where are the savings going to be, because that's the message with this budget season that we're hearing about that we really need to take back to the taxpayer.
Well, may I address?
That's fine.
May I address your comment or your question?
Briefly, Steve.
Okay, just quickly. Two points. One, in terms of savings, for concrete information about savings, recently we put the medical insurance portion of this in terms of the administrator out to bid. Currently, the county is paying over $60 per contract per month to administrate the program, their health insurance program that you have right now, through Excellus Blue Cross Blue Shield. The city's paying almost $45 per contract per month. The quotes that we received, because we have a much larger buying power now with over 2,000 contracts, are around $30 per contract per month. So right off the bat, even if we don't have any other efficiencies, we've already carved off, and really what the ultimate challenge of this is to reduce the administrative portion of the budget. We're not anticipating any huge savings on the benefit side. We're still providing the same exact benefits to the same exact people. And we're going to be using probably a very similar administrator, if not the same administrator, that you currently use. So if we can carve off some administrative savings, which was the key to, in the beginning, which we've already proven through the RFP that we can do the same thing on the prescription drug side. We can make it more efficient from that end. That does save everybody money. And in terms of the timing of this, unfortunately, there is no great timing. The state insurance department, we called them. We asked to have a meeting with them. This is the first consortium of this type that has been established since Article 47 became law, from the ground up. Every other consortium that's under Article 47 existed before the law was passed in 1993. We advocated to meet with the insurance department to go over a lot of issues, to make sure that what we were doing was in the proper format. Unfortunately, they have said to us, we'll hear you once you submit your application. We can't submit our application until we have a consortium. We don't have a consortium until you folks at least adopt the concept of what we're trying to accomplish and sign on to the process. If in the end we get to September or October and it doesn't look like it's going to happen, no big deal. You go back to doing what you were doing. At this point, what we're asking you for is to really buy in to the concept of coming together as a much larger group, sharing that risk, pooling your resources to run a more efficient health plan. And in terms of success, you don't have to look very far. There's a school consortium right here in Tompkins County that's been operating for over 20 years. And their last 6 years' increases on average were 6%, just a little over 6%. So, I mean, the model does work. You don't have to look very far to find that out. Just contact the BOCES. They will tell you how their program works. This program has to be set up slightly different under Article 47, but we have the models. We certainly have the information. And right now we have some proof that it will work because of the fact that the administrative budget came in under what we had anticipated.
Thank you, Steve. I'm going to go back to the speaking order. Mike Sigler.
Well, you answered, I think, one of my questions about who's going to administer this program now that it's out to bid. I guess I'm kind of in the same place that Frank is. And it's that I know we've been briefed on it. I talked about this in the hallway. I know we've been briefed on it. But I don't think there's anything really that's more important to people like right now than their health insurance. And that's why there's more trepidation about it than maybe you would run into it at other times with the economy. I wouldn't mind tabling this for 2 weeks and voting. I wouldn't mind doing that. As long as there was like maybe another briefing that I'll definitely come to. I know we've been briefed once on this, and you did an excellent job, and I'm not saying that. But like I said, there just really isn't much that we do that's more important than kind of health insurance for our workers. I'm glad you answered my one question as to who would administer this. Who decides changes to coverage was my other major question for you. It was, you know,
actually, that's in terms of the coverage itself. Mm-hmm. The consortium can do nothing to violate the collective bargaining agreements that are in place at all the employers.
Okay.
So there's nothing that the consortium can do as a body that would eliminate or change coverage or hold the employer harmless against any action by a collective bargaining unit. Their contract, their employee contract, is between the employer and the collective bargaining unit. Mm-hmm. The consortium can do nothing to change that. The only thing that will be a little bit different is instead of going to Blue Cross Blue Shield and saying, geez, we're thinking about adding this program, is it available? And then having them tell you whether or not it's available or if they could get it approved from the state insurance department, the consortium would be fitting in that role. So they would just be the vehicle to provide the benefits, and it would be the same role. There will be a number of options available that people can negotiate to. If somebody wants something that's not on the list, they can certainly ask the consortium board of directors for that coverage. As long as the consortium board of directors thinks it's in the best interest of the group and they can get it approved by the New York State Insurance Department, it'll be offered, which is basically the same role that Excel's Blue Cross Blue Shield plays today. And keep in mind, you know, a lot of times it gets referred to as the consortium. The consortium is you. It's each of the municipal entities is the consortium. So it's not like there's a separate body out there doing something to you. You're running the consortium. It is your decisions, your representative, that will decide the actions of the board. So if you want something, all you got to do is go to your board of director representative and have them bring it forth to the board of directors and get it through.
He's kind of making your case for you. So if I can ask him one more question.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, absolutely.
So say there's a treatment that someone in my family wants. We would still call it administrator. It might be Blue Cross Blue Shield like we have now.
It could be POMCO. It could be RIMSCO.
One of the ones that are approved within the state.
No question.
And then they would make that decision.
Yes, just like the insurance company does today. And then there's appeal processes that exist at the administrator, at the New York State Insurance Department, and then through the consortium as well.
So basically all this changes is our economy of scale.
Yes.
I have Mike Hattery, then Greg, and Martha, then Nathan again. Mike Hattery.
I think you said this, but I would like to hear you confirm it because I think there's a lot of language about it, and then I have one other thing I'd like to say. If the consortium comes into being, employees of the towns, villages, and city in the county will continue to negotiate what their benefit package will look like with their municipality, not the consortium. Is that correct?
Correct.
Can we have the county administrator at some point comment on his view on this issue?
I will add him to the speaking order. Greg Stevenson, next.
First point, I know that Nathan's personally invested in this procedure, but a no vote isn't necessarily the same as flushing money down a toilet. I've never flushed money down a toilet, and I have what I think are legitimate legal concerns with what happens if we put this together and it comes apart. It could happen. I don't think there's anybody out there that can guarantee us that it won't come apart if we put it together and start it. So I think that some of the concerns about what happens if it comes apart are fairly legitimate. Thereby, I think a no vote isn't quite flushing money down the toilet. I'm curious. I made a call to Anita yesterday, and I never did get in touch with her, but I'm wondering if Tompkins County has any collective bargaining agreements that provide for health insurance. I'm guessing we do. I'm guessing health insurance is mentioned in some of our collective bargaining agreements. If it is, I think, maybe could be wrong, but I think that makes it a mandatory subject to bargaining. And I think the county is then on the hook to bargain with the agents, the unions, the representatives of the collective bargaining units over the terms and conditions of this insurance. I could be wrong, but I haven't seen a lot of that take place. I've seen a couple presentations to unions, but I don't think that's collective bargaining. And I'm not sure what the answers to these questions are, but I think these are things that need to get hammered out before we join up to the consortium.
I think Joe may speak to that, but I see. So I'm taking notes. Martha?
Well, I'd like to know if Steve has an answer. I mean, this question of falling apart, and reiterate about collective bargaining.
Well, in terms of the two issues, one, in terms of the consortium getting up and running and then being discontinued or terminating at some point in the future, in the municipal cooperative agreement, it's very, very clearly spelled out exactly what that procedure would be. And it's also covered under Article 47 of the insurance law. You have to submit a dissolution plan to the New York State Insurance Department. There's a process that would have to be followed, and it's very detailed. In terms of the collective bargaining process, again, it's very difficult to sit down and speak about something that doesn't exist. The consortium doesn't exist until the municipalities sign on. The benefit plans don't exist until the consortium votes to approve those. The one thing that we know as fact is that those collective bargaining agreements do exist and that there is a guaranteed level of benefit. And the one thing we have iterated over and over again whenever we've gone out and spoken is that not only is it a quote-unquote guarantee, but it's a commitment that every single benefit line item that is currently enjoyed by the employees under their current plan, under their individual municipality, will be enjoyed under the consortium.
Thank you. That was my understanding. And the idea, I mean, every municipality has the opportunity to, under the agreement, to pull out at any given year. Is that also
That's correct.
Correct?
It's not a lifetime membership. Once annually, as long as they give notice by October 3rd of that given year, they can withdraw from the consortium at any point in time.
Right. And I mean, I just, I understand everybody's got a lot of things to pay attention to, and sometimes, you sort of gloss over a briefing that happens because we're not going to vote that day. But I think you've been here more than once, Steve. I know I gave a long report that about the agreement, and I remember lots of vacant looks of people getting up to get a drink. And TCOG meetings have been on public agenda. This has been on, I think there's been information out there for a long, long time about this. So my concern is that, this is, the county is, I don't see where we can lose anything. I truly don't, and I think we stand to gain. I don't know if you, Joe, if you have this on the top of your head, but this administrative cost issue, $60 per contract per month. So right now we're paying, Orville is his name, right?
Yes.
That's not the administrative.
The administrative fee that you're paying is the Excellus Blue Cross Blue Shield. That's what we're comparing.
On 1,100 contracts.
So you can do the math. So if that cost is cut in half by joining the consortium, again, that's real money. Okay, 1,100 times 12 months
per month, right.
Times $30.
I have Nathan, then Joe, then Mike Sigler, then I want to do a time check. In terms of, do we want to take a break or continue? Nathan.
First, I wanted to apologize to my colleagues, Greg and Kathy, for my strong use of words. I definitely did not mean to imply, and it came across this way, that you guys are advocates of flushing money down the toilet. Both of you guys are very, are people that are very concerned about saving taxpayer dollars. But my point merely was that this plan has significant savings, and if we don't go along with this plan, we lose those savings. But I just wanted to say real quick, though, that that not only are people going to, I mean, I've talked a lot about how people will have the same benefits that they've had before, but also there's going to be a lot of instances where villages and towns especially will actually have better benefits than they did before. I know that there's many places that have exclusive provider organizations where they had closed networks, where they couldn't even see a doctor outside of this very confined network. And now through the consortium, they'll actually be able to access, to be part of an open network, of a PPO.
I don't want to lose the flow of our conversation, folks. Let's go on to Joe and then Mike, and then we'll see if we're ready for a vote. Mike Sigler, that is.
Can I ask first, Joe, just because one of the questions actually will go to you.
Sure.
Minor just questions.
Go ahead and ask a quick question.
Okay. First, Joe, I just wanted to know how we ended up with the insurer that we have now. I mean, did that go out for bid? How did we kind of end up there? And my other was, we talked a lot about collective bargaining. who's going to end which collective bargaining agreement will take precedence? I mean, if you have one union out there that's negotiating, that's a part of this consortium, and they say, you know, they get the Cadillac, for example, do we then have to follow that collective bargaining agreement when other unions haven't negotiated that kind of level? You know what I'm saying? I mean, they're all going to have to be the same because they're all in the same program. So that kind of pertains to what you were asking as well, I think, is that there's really no reason to negotiate if you already have another union that's negotiated to a certain level. Those are my two questions. Thank you.
Okay, let Joe answer the ones that he can, and then Steve can maybe pick up anything left.
And I've been scribbling since Mike asked me to comment on this. First of all, the process itself has been unbelievably good. Nathan talked about a meeting every other Wednesday. I've been to most of those. Great discussions. Everything absolutely transparent. Everything that's been done by this group has been posted on a web page. So anybody who wants to look at what has been discussed, impact analysis, all they can see on the very transparent process, and I think it's led to a good conclusion. Here's some of the things that I've asked myself as this has gone forward. Will this cost us more or less? I think the answer is it will cost us less, and it will cost others much less. So that's question one. Do we exchange risk for cost? If our costs are going down, are our risks going to go up? And the answer that I think is the one that's been discussed is no, our risks don't increase by this at all. Is there going to be a reduction in benefits because of what we're doing? The answer is no. And care has been taken to make sure there is no reduction in benefits. And again, the transparency of all this, the side-by-sides are out there. So anybody who doubts that can take a look and make sure that there is not a reduction of benefits that can be verified. Do you lose control? Does the county still have the ability to negotiate who pays what? Benefit packages and all that. And conversely, do the unions cede any power that they may have to negotiate benefits? The answer to both those is no. We can still negotiate cost-sharing arrangements with our unions. The unions can still negotiate cost-sharing arrangements with us. If there's a desire for benefit change, that can go on the table and that can be negotiated. So there's no impact that relates to those things. What else was the question about union negotiations? Greg, if there's contract language that says that there is a specific plan that's made available to our employees, we'll need to sit with those employees and talk to them about this new plan. We've begun those conversations. You and I both attended one. It was a group setting. I think the most important thing is the assurance and verification that there is no reduction of benefits or the deal from the current plan to the new plan. And if there needs to be negotiations, there will be negotiations on that. So in terms of the way I think we've all been looking at this, those are the basic questions that we ask. I think they've been answered, and it takes me to a place of being very supportive of what's being proposed.
Let me ask Steve Losey to answer Mike Sigler's question about if one union negotiates, does that cover all the entities, or can each one have pick
and choose? No, and quite frankly, each bargaining unit can negotiate their own benefit plan. Each municipality can have their own plan. The only thing that will be common is if you have the same plan as another bargaining unit or another municipality, you will pay the same rate. So your premium equivalent rate will be the same for the benefits that are provided, but you can certainly negotiate a different copay structure for prescription drugs from one bargaining unit to another inside the county or the county to the city. Everybody has the latitude to negotiate their own package that they feel is reasonable, not only from a benefit perspective, but from a cost perspective.
Mike, my way of looking at it is it's a whole portfolio, like a smorgasbord. So every single possible benefit of every single town, village, city, and county has been costed out, and they're going to be available. So if your union at the town of, you know, Lansing, so to speak, says we already have these three out of the portfolio of 21 options, you'll look at those three and say, do they match that benefit? It won't necessarily have anything to do with the Tompkins County portion of the portfolio. So there's a whole spreadsheet there. Further discussion before we vote. Kathy Luce Herrera.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. With all due respect to Joe and to others here, I believe that it has been transparent and despite my need to go get glasses of water from time to time. I don't have a blank look with regard to this. I have what I believe is an analysis that suits the particular circumstance. And for what I understand and what I've heard Mr. Losey and others explain in detail to me is that there is some way that risk is being spread out over the larger group, and there is some opportunity that cost for some members of the consortium will rise. In addition to that, it's my belief that this could have an overall effect of lowering area standards with regard to some individual communities' agreements, and that's my belief. That comes from my life experience, and it drives my perception and why I will be voting no on this.
Okay, I just want to do a time check. It's 10 of 8. I think I'm seeing the spirit in the room. We want to proceed with this and other resolutions, but normally we would take a break at this time. Not seeing a request for that, we're going to proceed. Frank Proto, and I would like to proceed to a vote.
Nathan, were you able to remember the towns?
Oh, sorry. I was so caught up in discussion just now, I decided not to mess with my iPhone and look at it. I'll look.
The question that I have regarding that.
Steve actually had a sheet handed to him.
I think we got them.
Okay, great.
Town of Caroline, Town of Danby, Town of Ulysses, Town of Groton, and Town of Ithaca.
Have all signed on?
They've all passed resolutions.
So that's 4 out of the 9?
That's 5.
I'm sorry, 5 out of the 9?
5 out of the 15 towns and villages.
Oh, out of the...
The county is considering it tonight. It.
Okay.
The city is considering it on July 1st, I believe is the date.
Okay. Is there some spreadsheet that shows what the potential savings in each of the municipalities that have signed on or potentially
for every municipality.
It's on the website.
We got that a couple weeks ago.
That was passed out to this legislature.
By municipality.
By municipality, yes, mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. It's actually the increase for next year. And the trouble with that spreadsheet is that you have to take into account what might be the increase if you didn't do it. And that's not on the sheet because we don't have those numbers yet from the insurance.
And there are a couple small benefit plans that we're still working on, but 99% of the rates and benefits are on there. There's one or two very small benefit plans that we're still developing.
Martha Robertson?
Just very briefly, thank you. I didn't mean to insult anybody. I'm sorry. I just, I understand that we all sort of pick the things we get interested in and sort of trust each other to like, work on good faith on issues, and then it's maybe hard to pay attention to. Maybe not the sexiest thing in the world to pay attention to. So I certainly don't mean to disparage anybody. Sorry.
Michael Sigler.
I would like to move to postpone.
I was calling on Mike Sigler first.
I'm going to move to postpone when you...
I'll be quick. I just wanted to point out that Nathan got schooled by a piece of paper and a pen.
That's right. Yeah, I wasn't fast enough on the ground. Yeah. It's true.
Okay, are we ready to proceed to a vote?
Well, my last question is the same question I had before. Is when we go for insurance now, we send it out to bid, right? I mean, that's how do we do it now? I guess is my main question.
2000.
The county has had a unique plan that was renewed every year, and it was to our advantage because it was a form of insurance that protected the county against catastrophic losses without, it was called retrospective without recoupment. And but it's the only plan of its type that Excellus offers, and over the last 3 or 4 years we were trying to negotiate an incentive to change the plan, and they could, it never came about. And then this concept of the self-insurance, because with this insured product we have, there's a very expensive administrative cost to it, which is borne out by the proposals received from third-party administrators. So we haven't bid it out because we always understand that we get money back if we overpay in premium. And there was no other product comparable that was ever offered to compare it to.
And once we leave, there's no getting back on that.
Correct. I'm sure they'll bury that as deep as they can.
Yeah. Sure.
Are we ready to vote? Frank Proto.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move to postpone action on this item until our July, which is our next meeting, July 7th meeting, in order to give those of us that have had questions this evening an opportunity to not vote no, but gather the information that Nathan and Steve and others have brought forward tonight.
Motion to postpone. Is there a second? Mike Sigler. Debate on postponing until the next legislative meeting. Nathan, Carol, Martha.
I think that many of the questions were answered tonight, and the questions can be answered by looking at materials that are already out there. One of the things I'm concerned about is just that, you know, the county, there may be, I mean, just as if we're, we may be waiting on other towns and villages, I'm sure there are many towns and villages waiting on us and seeing the direction that we go, because we're very much viewed as the leader on this particular issue. And again, as Steve said, the faster we can get this done, the faster we can take it to the State Department, because they won't even talk to us until we have an agreement that we're in with this idea. And once we can work with the State Insurance Department, then we can make sure that it's hammered out and as smooth as possible for moving into October and November.
Carol and Martha?
Yeah, I just want to speak in favor of going ahead with this now. We've had a lot of opportunity to weigh in and to hear from our consultants. We have spearheaded this effort as a county. In healthcare, I think even more so than in a lot of other places, there really are economies of scale that we might be able to benefit from, and I don't see anything to be gained by sending it back yet again, and a lot to be lost in terms of the sign-on by the other municipalities.
To the motion to postpone, Martha Robertson.
What they said.
Anyone else wish to speak? All in favor of postponing until July 7th, please raise your hand. One, two, three, four, and opposed. I believe that's 10. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, 10. Yes, that fails 4-10. We're back to the main motion. It's the revised resolution G. Are we ready to vote? Greg Stevenson?
Unless I misheard Dave, the question about dissolution, the what if it falls apart, I looked over the section that the consultant referred to, and it specifies how the consortium is deconstructed, but then we'll be on our own to go out and get insurance again. I haven't heard anything about that. I think David just told us that might be kind of expensive. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I think that's what I heard. Are we really up to rolling the dice that much that we'll join a consortium that might fall apart? I don't know what likelihood it will, what percentage likelihood that it will fall apart or won't fall apart, but we'll be out there in the market buying insurance because we're legally obligated to buy it. Do we know anything about that?
David, do you want any speculation about 5 years from now, if it falls apart, the position it puts the county in? This is...
Well, it's kind of complicated subject. But the most cost-effective solution is to have a self-insured plan. And we can't have a self-insured plan unless we have 2,000 covered lives. The product we have now is unique in a sense that it tends to cause our premiums to be overstated because the insurance company wants to protect themselves. It's not because they refund to us. They have to absorb any loss, and they have no recourse against us other than if we renew the premium to recover through a rate increase, which is... And if they overwrite the premium, then they give us a refund. That product has been, you know, they don't like doing this product anymore, and we're the only one that has it. So it's unknown what would happen if we quoted a premium based upon, well, we could have a premium credit plan like the city has, which results in wild swings in premiums, 22% because... You can adjust your experience, but when you have a bad year, then you have to recover the next year. So, this The concept was this self-insured plan would provide stability over the long run versus the wild swings, which the county has because we've had refunds and rate increases. Refunds and rate increases. And we know that this year our plan experience has, to date has been there will not be a refund coming to us in the settlement next year because we've been basically burning through the premiums.
I realize that answer does not adequately answer your question because it's speculation, but are there others who wish to speak before we vote? I see Martha, then Frank, and I'd like to proceed to a vote.
I don't think anybody knows what the state of health care is going to be next week. I mean, that's not true. I mean, we know what it's going to be. I heard President Obama say that the whatever gets passed by Congress this year, hoping something will get passed, will take several years to roll out. So I think 5 years from now, I don't think there's anybody who can begin to predict what that environment will be like. I think we know what it is right now, and the next several years are certainly going to be a challenge, and I'd really much rather go it with a bunch of partners than go it alone.
And Frank Proto, let's go.
I turn to Jonathan Wood for clarification. I just want to make sure that if voting on the prevailing side permits you to bring an item back at the next meeting?
Permits you to move to do that.
Thank you for clarifying. Are we ready to vote? This is a roll call for revised Resolution G, authorization to enter into an agreement with the Greater Tompkins County Healthcare Consortium for New York State Shared Municipal Services Program.
Ms. Keeper?
Yes.
Ms. Mankesy?
Yes.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
Mr. Proto?
Can I pass?
Vote present?
Yes.
Mr. Randall?
Yes.
Ms. Robertson?
Yes.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Yes.
Mr. Sigler?
Yes.
Mr. Stevenson?
No.
Mr. Burbank?
Yes.
Ms. Chalk?
Yes.
Mr. Hattery?
Yes.
Ms. Herrera?
No, and I'll remind you about this a few years from now.
Mr. Klinkelaer?
Yes.
12 ayes, 2 noes.
Passes 12 to 2. Thank you very much. Do we need a break, or should we continue on?
Let's take a break.
I see a request for a break, so we'll take a very short break. 5 minutes. We have staff waiting. They've been waiting for almost 2.5 hours.